Welcome to the Hadean Press Podcast. In a break from our usual schedule of author interviews, we thought it might be a great opportunity for us to properly introduce the power behind the throne, the witch in the woods herself, co-founder and managing director of Hadean Press, Erzsébet Barthold. Erzsébet is the head of several publishing ventures, which we will discuss in today's podcast, as well as a member of the Independent Publishers Guild, the Societas Magica, and the European Society for the Study of Western Esotericism. Today we will be discussing Erzsébet's background in both magic and folklore, as well as her many other projects, including the Magical Women's Conference, Papaveria Press, and a behind-the-scenes look at what is currently happening at Hadean and her goals for the future. I am your host, Matt Hadfield, and I am very happy to present Erzsébet Barthold to the Hadean Press Podcast. Hi, Erze. It's really awesome to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Matt. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So today we decided to do something a little different, and we're going to focus on Hadean Press itself. So I'd really love to learn a little bit more about what's happening in the background, and to give our audience a sense of what we have brewing for the future. There's a lot of exciting stuff coming up, but before we jump into all of that, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you discovered magic?
Well, we are going back quite a few years. So I guess, privileged to grow up in a family of readers. So there were always books. And my mother, I was 11, around about the time she started to dabble, we'll say, in witchcraft. It was a little bit trendy at the time, still very, very much a rebellious act to be involved with it. And she had on her bookshelf an ABC of Witchcraft, Past and Present by Doreen Valiente. And I found this book. And as with, you know, many, many people who get into magic, I was quite the little outsider even then. I knew about different types of magic just through having read fairy tales all of my young life, and some fiction, some magical fiction. And I found this book and I thought, man, that is me. That's, what is this? This is me. This is for me. And so I adopted that identity. Sadly, there was, where I lived at the time, very, very little in the way of any other books. So I think there were a couple Crowley in the school library, funnily enough. There was no internet, of course. There was no local community. So I was just on my own for a very long time, but it did give me a good start. I think the next thing I sort of found was the Gavin and Yvonne Frost selling medallions in the back of, you know, those terrible newspapers that used to come out just full of absolute shite. And there they were in the back. Some Pentacles of Solomon. I'm sure I bought a Pentacle of Solomon when I was 12 with my the money I had earned doing something, you know, raking leaves or something. So it was very cobbled together in the early days, but that is essentially how I got into it. It was because of a book, because already feeling like I was connected in some way. It was very connected in some way to the natural world, and the, I couldn't say this at the time, but the spirits of place where I lived. So yeah, it was an easy in for me.
Yeah, it's always interesting to hear about which book it was that captured people's imaginations in this way and led them into the study and practice of magic. So yeah, that's lovely. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Erze. So you mentioned that there wasn't a lot really in regards to books and that in your life at that time. So is that what led you to establishing Hadean Press?
No, I just love books. There were a lot of books in my life. There just were not a lot of books in the bookshop or in the libraries to find on subjects of magic at that time where I lived. But I was raised amongst a mountain of books, and I have always loved them. I used to take them apart and to see how they were made. I tried reading the Fairy Queen, Spenser's Fairy Queen, part, I can't remember, when I was four. I read very early because my at that time when I was very young, my grandmother raised me and she was a school teacher. So it was just I was surrounded by I love books. I've always loved books. I've always escaped in them. You know what I mean? That's always been my big like, ooh, I'm out of here. Bye.
It's your absolute passion. Yeah.
So did you study bookmaking in any official capacity?
I'm self-taught. I did a little bit of I was a guest in a couple courses at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. But no, I was self-taught. You know, well, I say self-taught, but you know, it didn't happen in a vacuum. I had lots of colleagues that did bookbinding. I joined very briefly the Antiquarian Society in Philadelphia, just to share the love of books. But the bookbinding, I read a lot of books. I eventually the book arts list came live when the internet happened. I was on that for years, still am. And it's just something I love to do. I don't do enough of it.
So how did Hadean Press come to be then? What's the story behind that?
Well, I had come to England, and where before I was doing Papaveria Press, which I know you said we'll get to, I was struggling to find my footing here, and I could not, it seemed, keep doing the same thing I had been doing. And essentially, after just and I got married, I wanted a project, something we could work on together. And of course, books being the only thing I know, it just seemed natural. And we shared a love of magic. You know, he introduced me to all sorts of things. I think I finally, you know, changed his mind about a few things. And it just made sense that we start a little occult publisher. And I just and there at first we had nothing to publish. We were like, right, we're doing this. What do we publish? You know, we thought about going the way of doing the old public domain stuff and rewrapping it in a pretty book or whatever. But then we met Jake, and that changed everything. Everything.
And so Jake was the first person you published through Hadean?
Yes. Well, Jake's British Journal of Philema. So Jake had inherited that from the previous publishers, and he edited it and, you know, filled most of it with his own writings. And that happened because Dis introduced me to EQ, the English Kabbalah, and I was that enamored of it. I went right to the source and began an email correspondence with Jake. So I just wrote to him like, you know, any other little fangirl, like, oh my God, Jake's again, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And he wrote back, as in everybody who's ever corresponded with Jake can imagine what I got, a very friendly and warm reply. And after a while there was the Thelemic Symposium, which I believe was in Oxford in 2008, nine, I can't remember, long time ago. And we met Jake in person there. I did for the first time. Dis had known met him in the 80s. So and yeah, that was it. I mean, Jake was integral in it, all the way through, but in those early days, I don't think I've managed to convey well enough how much a part of Hadean Press he was. The guides were his idea. The first few publications, I think, were Jake and somebody. Yeah, so that's how it was all very guerrilla style at first. Just would print the journals at work and bring them home, and I'd, you know, glue them together. And yeah, the pamphlets, he'd print them at work. I'd staple them together, cut them down. It was fun when there were like three.
And so these the journal these journals now, they've become Magnus Dictus.
Jake's writings out of journals 1 through 11 are in Magnus Dictus, yes, the spake Magnus Dictus, and it's all a facsimile, as you know, because you have one. I'm not, that's just no way. I mean, you couldn't even OCR some of that stuff. It's that old. So, yeah, I just thought we couldn't reprint the first 9 because of rights issues, the first 8 because of rights issues. And there were a lot of different authors in there as well, and some of them deceased. And I just thought, well, I didn't want Jake's writings to be lost to the dawn of time. Yeah, exactly. Thus spake. There it is. Matt has just shown me his copy of Thus Spake Magnus Dictus.
Yep, it's on my desk.
And that honestly, I had been wanting to do that for a while when that was published. But what happened was that came about with Rosie because that was the lockdown year of 2020. And Jake, he was in pretty dire straits being stuck where he was, like all of us. And I wanted to get some money in his pocket. So I rushed that publication out, and then we got Rosie out for the same reason.
So you mentioned Jake was integral to the pamphlet concept, which is like unique to Hadean Press. So maybe our audience, they might be aware that Hadean put pamphlets out. What's the importance of pamphlets? From your perspective, why is it that these guides to the underworld are such an integral part of the of Hadean Press, and what are your objectives with them?
Well, the pamphlets for me are pure nostalgia, and that is how they came about. Liz and I were in Bristol visiting Misha and Jake, very early days, and we just were talking about our experiences growing up. And I happened to mention that one of the things I absolutely loved was going into a used record shop or a used bookshop, and there'd be like, you know, this wall of pamphlets, and there'd be all kinds of pamphlets, but you could more often than not find an absolute gem of somebody's magical working that they'd recorded, you know, photocopied, pasted, taped some art in or whatever, and just stapled together and chucked out there in the world for people to see. And we were talking about that, and Jake said, well, you should do pamphlets. Let's do pamphlets. And I was like, yeah, why don't we do pamphlets? The customer called them pocket rockets the other day, and I thought that's exactly right. That's so perfect. For me, it's like, I look, the whole thing of Hadean Press and having something that costs £3, but gives you access to such incredible wealth of information, because you know a lot of those pamphlets are absolutely chock-a-full of incredible knowledge and practical, that's what I like, the practical stuff. But I was a young single mother for some time, and I could not afford anything. I could not afford a book. I could not afford anything. And that's my target audience, is young people. Or people who just can't, you can find £3. You know, you can dig that out the back of the sofa, and you can have access to this material that you otherwise just would be out of reach. So that's a real thing for me. You know, I think magic should be accessible. Even if you can't understand it, you should be able to access it. And obviously we have to pay the bills or give it all away for free.
And so I know I have a few of the Hadean pamphlets, which are my absolute favorites, but do you have any that you're particularly fond of, or you're particularly invested in? Is there any that you particularly love?
I'm not allowed to have favorites. I particularly love my own pamphlet, Cyprianic Cartomancy. There we are.
Oh,
I'm not allowed to have favorites. It's like being a parent. I feel like I would not want to offend one author by telling another author that I liked somebody else's stuff better. Some of it is more useful to me personally, but that's a personal thing. I love them all equally.
So could you tell us a little about your pamphlet, your Cartomancy pamphlet?
That just came from when we'd done the Book of St. Cyprian, Jose and I. And I was trying to do the cartomancy in the book, and as you do it, I realize some of this just doesn't make sense. So let me try and put my spin on how to make it make sense and how it works for me. That's all it was. Let me clear up this one thing in a practical manner, and do that. You know, I don't take any royalties from it. It just feeds into Hadean. But it was a real joy to write that. You know, it was. I don't often share my experience, my, you know, practical experience, unless, you know, you want to know how to publish something or find a book. So that was good fun.
And Josie has something else coming through Hadean soon.
Yep, Cyprian Seven Magical Hours. That is this crazy little book he found and digging around in the archives, of course. And what I love about it is the absolutely wacky divining tool it describes. And I literally went out and we bought a bunch of dowels, and I found some proper shaped stones in the garden, and I was trying like hell to put this thing together and make one of these, but the real life size of it is like, you know, at least man size, at least human size. You know, it's meant to be enormous. It's impractical. So that failed. But it's a very, very interesting little book. And I think, you know, Cyprianistas will like it. And if anyone ever does manage to make this divining tool, I really would like to see it.
Is it like a rod, like a divining rod?
It's a rod with a
stang,
square, and a circle, and they should go together geometrically.
Okay,
but then we can't figure out like, well, how do you actually use it? You know, how would you actually carry this? Because it's about, you know, treasure hunting. Is you're going places, you're carrying your kit with you. You need, I can't, like, unless it can double as your walking stick, which feels like it couldn't because it'd be a bit unwieldy. We in the early days, we couldn't work out whether somebody was making a joke, you know, whether it was just a joke book, somebody taking the piss.
Yeah.
Out of treasure hunters, you know, running around with their little books saying Cyprian, which is kind of, it's just absolutely incredible. But Josie's done a lot of work with the text since then, and the introduction is absolutely glorious. It just really dives into Cyprian books as a whole again. And, you know, he's just finished writing his thesis on all of this. So he has for us pulled chunks out, you know, spruced them up a bit. So we get a little glimpse into all that as well. Yeah, it's going to be really good.
I'm excited for it. I just saw him mention something briefly on social media, and I thought, oh, that looks interesting. So you established and have curated the Magical Women's Conference for many years now. And to read from the website, the Magical Women's Conference pays homage to the women and trans women of the past who challenged the status quo by embracing mysticism, esotericism, and occult teachings, and to those who continue those rich traditions through lived practice, performance, and adeptship. This support and promotion of women in the esoteric community is absolutely outstanding. Can you tell us about the history of this conference and what you hope to continue achieving with it in the future?
So the Magical Women Conference came about as a result of one of the original co-founders, Sue Terry, had discovered yet another conference about magical women, like, say, you know, Dionne Fortune, etc. Historic magical women, but all the speakers were men.
Oh.
We thought that, you know, like, the consensus was there weren't enough women speakers to fill an event, or to, I don't know, even do 50%. I don't know. And the timing was absolutely right for us to prove that wrong. So there was a little bit of that at the beginning. Like, you think there's not enough women speakers to even get a couple of them in an event. Let us show you. So we put this thing together as a way to not only to prove that yeah, there's plenty of women out there doing the work that have something important and interesting to say, but to make sure there was a place where they could say it without being, without experiencing many of the things that, you know, unfortunately women, and especially trans women, do face. We get talked over, we get, you know, dismissed, we get, you know, just erased. And we wanted to create a space where none of that would happen. You know, we got some flack for having all women speakers. You know, the men were like, why can't, you know, I'm a, you know, scholar of blah, blah, blah. Why can't I? And we're like, yeah, okay. But, you know, there's like 1,000 other conferences you can speak at. Let's just, let us just have this. Let us have this moment. So we got 40 speakers. Dolores Ashcroft Nowicki was our guest of honor. And the day was intense, as you can imagine. But what I liked and still really enjoy about this event is the connections that are made. At that first one, 2019, I heard people say that they hadn't seen some of the other attendees in decades. And so it created a space where, you know, men are very welcome to attend these events. They're very welcome to attend. They're very welcome to volunteer. They're very welcome to be a part of it in any kind of way. Men, trans men, everybody can come in and help make the day happen. But we just wanted the spotlight to be on the women. And those connections, I still see them. Like, people met at that conference and then befriended each other on Facebook and are besties now. And services are being used, you know, that people, magical services, they didn't even know so-and-so existed. Just the connections that we made. And that is, for me, one of the most, you know, heartening and wholesome things to have come out of it.
I would so love to attend one, if only I weren't so far away. But yeah, the lineups are always really interesting. And well, actually, I should ask you now, really. So where is this conference held?
Well, this year, it used to be in London. This year, we're in the Birmingham and Midland Institute, a very lovely historic building just near the Art Museum in the center of Birmingham. So we wanted a more central place. London is great, but it's hugely expensive. And Birmingham is, you know, you can come to it from the north, the south, east and west. And it's just there. And it is absolutely the most underrated city in this country, if I can have this tiny rant. It is beautiful there. I mean, I don't live there, and that might be not so great. But the times I visited, it's absolutely gorgeous.
I used to go out there drinking when I was at university.
Yeah, I can see why. I am looking at going to Birmingham University. Yes, for my master's.
Okay, that's cool. And so is it held at the same time every year?
Yes. Well, we did have the terrible blip of, we had our first absolutely stunning conference and then the pandemic.
Mm.
Right, so we lost a lot of momentum thanks to the pandemic. We went online, and that was nice. That was very nice. We did a lot online in 2020 and 2021 once we figured out the best way to move forward. So we did the summer salons. That was like, we'd get two speakers together of a Sunday afternoon, evening, talking about relatively, you know, similar things, and then have one on after the other, and then a nice Q&A. So we did that. We've had other online events. We've had the Moon Covenant Summit. We had an esoteric art online event. We had a Margaret Murray conference. We had a live Little Cyprian event conference where Jose came over in London. That was live. That was not terribly long after all the pandemic stuff was behind us. So we did lots of things, but we didn't have another live conference similar to the first one until 2021. Is that right? 22. And that was again in London. And then last year, we didn't have one. We didn't, we I think last year we did the Moon Covenant Summit, or that might have been this year. It's all very much a blur, but we didn't have one in 2023, a live one.
So this year is really the beginning of you reestablishing this momentum.
Pretty much, yeah, I think so. We're not entirely sure how we're going to go into the future after this one. We're gonna see how this one goes. Doing a live event, you do miss a lot of people who can't attend where they could if you did something online. So, but then online you lose the essence of what makes live events great. It's a very difficult place to be in. You know, if I had my way, we would do all of the above, right? Mm. But you know, time is of the essence. Yeah, I don't. I am stretched quite thin as it is. So to do all of the above for the conference probably might not work for me.
And so can you tell us about anything that's happening this year at this event? It's very soon, right?
Yes, it's very soon. It is on the 22nd of this month. We have, well, this year our guest of honor is Kathleen Matthews. She was a speaker at the first one, so it's great to have her as the guest of honor this time. She has worked in the field for decades. I used to, hers is some of the work I used to really gobble up back in finally in my 20s when I had access, I moved to the city, so there was like a New Age shop or two. You could actually get some stuff. It was amazing. So yeah, hers was some of the first work I gravitated toward. So it's good to have her. We've got our artist in residence this year is Charlotte Rogers, who, if every occultist doesn't know her name, really needs to get on the Magical Women Conference website and follow links to her site. Charlotte has been an animist since before animism was even a word that we knew. She makes the most incredible bone art from found roadkill, found whatever bones she's collected at shop, you know, charity shops or whatever. Everything. She just, oh, it's gorgeous. Yes.
Is her artwork in the Conjure Codex series?
Yes. Somewhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I've seen some of this art, but I need to be more familiar with her work. Yeah, for sure. And anyone else presenting?
Our storyteller in residence is Elizabeth Jane Lovely, who of course touches my heart because she works with fairy tales. she took over in 2022 when we had a last minute cancellation of one of our storytelling speakers who was going to do a story on the descent of Inanna. So Elizabeth Jane Lovely took over. And that's when I knew that she was just going to be perfect for the storyteller in residence. And that is something that has, you know, we went down a lot of pathways since 2019, you know, changing the themes of it, changing the location of it, changing whether it's online or offline. I decided for this one, we really needed to return to not 40 speakers, although 25 was. He's still like pushing the boat out.
Yeah,
we really needed to return to that original structure where we had the guest of honor, the speaker in residence, storyteller in residence, and the focus was the history, women in history, contemporary women and their practice, and women in the creative arts. So when you think of occult women in the creative arts, most people will think of Leonora Carrington. She's the goddess of esoteric artists everywhere. So those are the three main ones. But I mean, we have unfortunately lost one of the speakers can't attend, but we've got, of course, there's some Haitian authors. So we've got Sarah Mestros, we've got Sasha Ravitz, Sean Sibley, who is not really a Haitian author, but has written for the Magical Women Conference, our first publication, the proceedings of 2019. And we've got returnings, Kate Laity, the first thing she talked about for us was Leonora Carrington, of course. So it's Emma Catherine is returning, but we've got Dr. Camilla McRostwick, Dr. Haley Morrow, talking about disability and magic. Camilla's talking about witch hunt memorials in Kristiansand, Norway. It's just the variety is, even within those three very narrow, well, not very narrow at all fields, the variety of what we get is just intense. And it's I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an excellent day.
Hadean isn't your primary focus. I mean, it is your primary focus, but Hadean isn't your sole focus. You also have another press, Papaveria, which you mentioned earlier, through which you publish fairy tales, folklore, myth. And there's also a rumor that you're about to begin another publishing project as well. I've heard something about that this year. So could you tell us about these other presses that you're working on?
Papaveria Press is my first love. I founded that in 2001 when I was living in the Arts District of Philly, Philadelphia, in the States. It's had its moments. Mostly what I did there was hand-bound miniature books. So of fiction, fairy tales, short stories, a lot of short stories. I ended up publishing some later award-winning authors. These were, of course, the live journal days, so it was very easy to be in touch with people, because anybody who was anybody had a live journal. and that was such a good time for me, making those little mini books. But Papaveria has lain dormant for some time because Hadean Press has eaten my life. So when some, I one of the things I want to do with Papaveria, and this is a pandemic idea, so what I had a lot of time then and I don't have so much now, but I haven't canned the project, is reprinting a lot of the early fairy studies that are completely outdated now, but still, you know, have a valuable place. And I just wanted to do very, very lovely little editions of them. So that is still happening. I've got some interesting people agreed to write new introductions for these old texts. But then, of course, once you start thinking about a thing, you attract some energy to it. So I started to get fairy submissions. So I'm only looking at nonfiction now. So I thought, well, these submissions are coming in that I could just roll them out under Hadean Press, but they tie in very nicely. And I will say that one of them is a poem, Song of Oberon, by Amin Lama has translated that. So that's as far into fiction as I'm going to go. The other one is by José, and it's a Melusine study. So those are two coming out from Papaveria. And it'll I think it'll be good to, you know, every year, just one or two. Keep it, get it going again.
Get that ball.
You know, there was always, there was always some, you know, these things, they do have a life of their own. Other publishers might agree, might not, but you know, especially in a cult publishing company, it's like an egregore. It just like, I now work for it in every sense of that phrase, right? So it was really difficult for me. One of the reasons Papaveria Press laid dormant was because it was really difficult for me to get the time to work on Papaveria as its own thing. And I could have just been, well, if I just make it an imprint of Hadean Press, it's all in one, and I don't have to think of it as a separate thing and like a separate project. But I have not wanted to do that because Papaveria is such a precious thing to me, and I wanted it to be its own thing. But you know, you get old and tired, so now I'm over all that, and it is going to become an imprint of Hadean Press just so I can get some work done, you know what I mean? Just so something will happen, because I will procrastinate on these points for a very long time. Hysteria's Press is simply The one of the things, the Magical Women Conference, which is now Lucy Greenwood and I, who's Lucy's also my publishing assistant. Many of our listeners will be familiar with Lucy because they will have encountered her in the email. But she started helping with Magical Women Conference first. So now it's Lucy and I. And we wanted to do a little anthology. And this is fiction, a little anthology themed, you know, around the elements is what we decided on. Lucy's pretty much at the helm of this one. I do the, you know, some editing and do the book layout and everything. But this is Lucy at the helm here. And originally, it was going to be published by Magical Women and Company Publications. And Magical Women and Company is just the company behind the limited company, just for some protection of the Magical Women Conference. But my darling accountant decided that, or suggested that we should keep all of the publishing in the same business rather than dilute it. So we just made the Asterias Press imprint to publish anything that we come up with on the Magical Women's side. It's still very much a Magical Women Conference thing. It just has to be published by Hadean Press now. So we're doing at least four. The first one, Earth, is coming out at, going to be released at the conference, Magical Women Conference, this weekend. After that, it will be available on the website and, you know, other online sellers if anyone would like to pick up a copy. Got some really good authors, got eight very unique stories. I worked briefly in genre publishing, and I know you're supposed to like, it should either be a fantasy book or a science fiction book or a horror book. But I, you know, I'm not trying to get on the New York Times bestseller list so we can do what we want. So we've got all kinds of, we have all of the different genres represented, even folk horror in a lovely piece by Liz Williams. It's been great fun to work on that.
So you have also recently opened a physical bookstore, which I had the pleasure of visiting last year. How has that been going for you?
Well, it looks a lot different to when you were there. It's it's going quite well. As bookshops around the country will tell you, there are good days and there are bad days in terms of like how many people come in and actually shop. But it's also attached to Hadean Press, so we're not going to have to pack up and move if we go a couple of days with no sales. The bookshop came about because Hadean Press kind of outgrew. Or needed it didn't outgrow, but it needed a different type of premise at one point, because I outgrew working at home after, you know, so over so many years of doing it. And where we were wasn't really a good place to sit and work all day. So we were scouting for a premise, and we came across what used to be the vacuum shop in Keithley. It had what Hadean needed at the time. We've actually, you know, we need more space again. Never ends. But it also had that front facing, you know, retail space. And I had been talking about opening a bookshop with my people here, you know, with my dance troupe, my husband, and for about 3 years, two, 3 years, it'd been going on. And there'd been a couple of signs, like, I'm a great one for signs. The birds have flown to the west. Oh, dear. You know what I mean? This kind of thing. I'm really into that. That's how I live. I live my life by signs. And I got a couple signs. And I thought, So we went to look at the space. And I took the space as the third sign, because I walked in. And despite the absolute carnage that was this space at the time, I could see immediately the bookshop overlaid on top of that. The ceiling was a bit lower than it actually is, but I could see.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So I knew that was the right place. And what I love about it is that it has now become the hangout for some people. You know, we have our regulars, and we have it is the hangout, like, the people who play magic will sometimes gather there and run into each other there. And then they'll have like this really long and involved conversation about Magic the Gathering that just goes right over my head. Or, you know, readers will come in. Oh, you know, they know each other from somewhere else and they hang out and chat. And it's become a place where the others among us, you know, feel comfortable.
Yeah, I really love that. It's rare to find a good bookshop these days.
It is. And I have to say, it's a good bookshop. It's a good bookshop. It's I don't think that's gloating or bragging. I think it is just a solidly good bookshop. But it is because I have been involved in some way or another with science fiction and fantasy since 2001. Even, you know, in the early days, I was on the sidelines. I was just like nobody. I'm still nobody in that area, but I'm a great observer. You know what I mean? And I've made a lot of connections over the years, a lot of connections. Papaveria published a lot of people, and not through Papaveria, but through Cabinet de Fae, which was our online fairy tale journal, which started in print, then went online. And the amount of people I know is just incredible, and I'm really blessed and privileged to have all these connections. So it's like the shelves are packed with people I've either met, have published, have had some kind of, you know, friendly relationship with, or follow on Facebook or something. There's some strangers in there as well. I have a lot of, especially in the science fiction section, a lot of the classics. But I have the benefit of knowing what the classics are. Like, no one leaves without Philip K. Dick in their pocket. This is the law. And then of course there's the games section, which is really the only place you can buy a board game or a tabletop role playing game in Keithley.
It's building community.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Things have recently changed up internally as well at Hadean Press. Who's recently joined the team, and what are the plans regarding that in the future?
Well, recently, Jeff Greenwood has joined as our finance manager after the sad death of our last accountant, Nigel Fisher, last year. So now I answer to Jeff. Like, I used to be the boss, but now I just, you know, I answer to the money man and I do what he tells me to do. He's been a great, great addition to the team. And of course, we have recently taken on board David Rankin, who we all know as a prolific author of many, many years. He is now the editor-in-chief. So he is... right now working on pretty much one project at a time, but as time passes, he'll be liaising with many more of the authors. He'll be liaising with the other two freelance editors that I have, Brian Johnson, Matt Morash. They're both very, you know, and just incredibly important to Hadean. The whole team is you are. It wouldn't be what it is. It just would be something much smaller and probably a lot more boring.
Yeah, I think everyone's really excited to see what David's going to offer in the future through Hadean.
Well, we do have a surprise book of his coming out. You know, the schedule is full. It's absolutely chocka between now and the end of 2025. It's full. I might open to some guides submissions in January, but even that is full. One a month, every month. It's unheard of. This started last year. It's unheard of, the amount of submissions. I've had to turn really good work away right now because I can't, you know, especially with a guide to the underworld. What, you got to wait 9 months to get 12 pages published? It's unnatural. It's not right. So... David has a very interesting, and I don't have the file here with me, or I'd tell you more, but a very interesting book forthcoming with Hadean Press, which is not, I have not put on the schedule yet, the public schedule. I will do that next week when I'm back at my desk. It's called Clava's Intelligentarium, and it is essentially a practical guide to grimoire practice. So, like, here you are. You've got your favorite grimoire, but you're not sure how to start. Here's the key. This is how you start. It's very clear, very concise. We all know how well David writes about these subjects. He knows his stuff. And it is essentially working with the planetary intelligences. So it's not lengthy. It's not like, you know, the 1,000 pages of the Grimoire Encyclopedia. It's short to the point. It's going to be a really good addition to the list. He is doing volume three. He's working on volume three of the Grimoire Encyclopedia as well. But that might be 2025, 26. And the text he's working on for Hadean right now, I'm really excited about. And again, I'm not allowed to have favorites. I don't have favorites, but An Inquiry into Necromancy by Jim Baker, author of The Cunning Man's Handbook. So, you know, most of us should know who Jim is from that publication. So he's got this massive Inquiry into Necromancy. It is apps. You guys are gonna love it. Yes. Another absolute unit of a book.
Yep.
It's really in depth, really well written. So David's editing that now for us. I'm so blessed, really. The quality of stuff that gets sent to Hadean is really, you know, I'm not worthy, I feel sometimes. I'm not worthy. That is why, that is part of what has led to the changes behind the scenes that, you know, unfortunately aren't really fun and exciting for anybody except me. And that is the change in the way we publish, which is going to start small and going to cause some initial chaos. It's just the way of it. It's very difficult to go from how we have published to a more traditional model. A lot of moving parts and a lot of people that, you know, external to Hadean that need to actually cooperate. Getting an email reply from some of these things I have to deal with is nigh on to impossible. But we are getting there. And, you know, by next year, without a doubt, phase one of this process will be done. And by the end of next year, I feel like we'll be well into phase two, which will be just, you know, more traditional publishing, offset printing. I am undecided as to whether or not to keep the you know, one level up of a standard hardcover, that middle ground between standard and deluxe where we kind of sit right now. I'm undecided about doing that for every book. It will just see how we go, you know. It's I'd rather have people have more access than
limited edition goat skin.
Yeah, something for the, you know, reserved few. But then, like most of us, I like a fancy book, you know. I cannot. If I lose sight of the roots of the thing, where like I was thinking about myself as a single mother, too poor to do anything but feed the kids and make sure they had clothes for school and etc. You know, if I lose sight of that, I will not want to do this at all anymore, and I will shut it down. I will shut it down because that's what I do. As soon as I feel I've lost the plot, I shut things down and walk away. I don't stay.
All right. Well, I think me and Dis might like intervene at some point then to make sure that doesn't happen.
This is why I have a team. Interventions. I am here for your intervention. I am here for it. Yes.
Well, Erzé, I'm really excited and honored to be part of the Hadean project, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you're going to accomplish in the future. But is there anything else that you are working on at the moment, or personally, or anything that you're obsessed with at the moment?
Yes, this answer will never change. Fairies. So I became obsessed with the Grimoire fairies way back when the Book of Oberon, which is my favorite book of all time, was published. And again, when the pandemic happened, I thought, right, I'm finally going to sit down and start writing this book that has been in the back of my mind, just about these Grimoire fairies. Who are they? Where did they come from? Etc. And so I got I got quite far in this book. And then I realized as I was writing it that I could not write it the way I wanted to write it because I did not have any higher education. So until very recently, I have been a high school graduate. End of story. Everything I know, I've taught myself. That's there's no chip on my shoulder about it. That's just what it was. And I, of course, worked with academics all of the time. Ever since I started working with other people, there's been academics in my space, so I could see what I didn't have, right? And it didn't bother me until I tried to write this book on the fairies. And then it bothered me because I wouldn't write the book. And I could see what they had that I didn't. And I thought the only way to get it was to go into university. So I did. I did the if I could remember the name of it, Certificate of Higher Education with Oxford University's Department for Continuing Education. So it was not a bachelor's. It's not a master's. It's just the very first tiny little rung on the ladder. Because I'm old, I can go from that rung directly into a master's because I'm old and super intelligent. Apparently, I got, you know, a good enough mark that I'm off. But what more importantly, I now have the tools I need to write that book in the way I need to write it, which is not super academic, but also not making a complete fool of myself. However, this book is a slow project because I was all fired up about it. I was working on it, went to university, writing papers left and right, which I love a paper, man. I love writing a paper. I was like, yes, go for the book. But there is a scholar out there whose name I will not say who has done his PhD on the fairies and the grimoires. Lovely young man. And I saw him make a Facebook post after he'd submitted his thesis, please nobody publish anything on these fucking fairies until this thing is, my thesis has been published. And I thought, that's fine, I won't. I took that personally. I was like, okay, I won't publish what I'm doing. And I probably won't publish it until his has been published, because obviously writing on a topic like that, you've got the attention of a number of scholars, and you've especially got the attention of the Societas Magica and University of Pennsylvania Press Magic and History series. So I fully expect to see a part of his thesis come out as a publication for all of us to enjoy. And I will obviously get that and cite it profusely in my own book. You know, I don't see publishing or writing as a competition sport. I do not need to get anything out there first. I need what I write to be thorough. And of course, it's going to have my weird little spin on it, and probably nothing like, you know, probably nothing like what he's written at all. There's room for two, but I just don't want to interfere with his process, and I don't want to rush mine. So it's happening all the time, the fairies in the background, all the time. That's my obsession. Like, not just those fairies in the grimoires. I saw them, like, when I was very, very young. I'm sure I'm convinced I saw them. You can't tell me I didn't. And so that's my first love. First love. And my eternal love.
Well, I really look forward to having you on where we can talk more about the seven fairies from Oberon, because I have to admit it's one of my favorite grimoire texts as well. And there's so much really interesting and still quite mysterious background there that I think a lot of people don't understand, or they've never even explored, and English folklore and everything mixed into it.
My specific focus is the seven named sisters, right? So There's others mentioned, you know, there's Oberon mentioned, there's, I'm not going to give too much away, but, you know, read the Book of Oberon and you'll see how many fairies are in there. But there's a specific set of seven sisters and their names change here and there, but they're quite specific for quite a long time. Mm. And they did not start their life as fairies. They started their life as malarial fever sisters. And a lot of their story is completely not magical, but it has to do with the shifting religious environment of the English Reformation. I read history at university. History is like my thing. And there is a lot to dig in there too that might not be very interesting to many of our hardened occultists, but I'm of the opinion that you kind of have to know where you've come from to know where you're going. And context for me is queen. So that is the area I really want to look at. But I'm also quite interested in tracing them all the way back, because they have a very long history. You know, these particular set of names are extant for a very long time.
Mm.
A very long time. And I like following that. Like, oh, here they appear in Denmark. Oh, here they appear in France. Oh, here they are down here in Italy. I love that, you know, and guessing at how they were transmitted from one place to another. Following the trail of monks as they traveled in the 7th century kind of thing. You know, this is, I love a puzzle. So my little book will not be just about the fairies, although it is all about the fairies.
Well, I'm here for it. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
As you can notice, I really do get involved in talking about this. Yeah, it is an obsession. It is.
Well, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today, Urze. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
And you? Yes. Thank you for having me. I don't like to do these appearances. I don't like to be public. My dear friend Jason Miller is always telling me to get out there. I'm just not interested. I'm interested in like being the power behind the throne, the witch in the woods, doing her little spells, completely unbothered by the rest of the world. But I come out now and again to prove to people that I do exist.
That was Urzebet Barthold, co-founder and managing director of Hadean Press, discussing her history and involvement in the esoteric community, publishing, and the Magical Women's Conference. I'm really glad Urze took some moments from her insanely busy schedule today to talk to me about some of the behind-the-scenes goings-on at Hadean Press. We mentioned quite a few upcoming works from Hadean authors, which I hope that you will be as excited about as I am. I can attest that David Rankin's forthcoming work is an absolute gem, and Jose's work on the magic of Cyprian never disappoints. Tickets for the Magical Women's Conference have already ended this year. We will make sure to advertise the event through the show in advance next time, so everyone is aware and gets the opportunity to make it and come and support the many wonderful speakers, artists, poets, and magicians, which will surely be in attendance. Our next podcast will have a guest presenter, as the subject of the podcast will be my very own forthcoming work, which I am very excited to share with everybody. Until then, I hope you are all enjoying the beginning of the summer season. The solstice is upon us. Please hit the like button and share our videos with those who might find our work interesting. Thank you all so much for your continued support, and we will see you all again in the next one.